You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Mysteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Welcome to Desperate. If you don't know already, this is a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. I'm Julia, and I am watching this show for the first time.
And I'm Jordan, and I am watching this for possibly the 10th time. Who even knows at this point?
I'm glad that you're watching it with me.
Your 10th round. I mean, it's been years since I've watched it, so it's almost like, you know, a new perspective. I think I was probably in high school last time I watched it. So Ooh. Now I'm an adult. It's still different.
Yeah.
Hits a little bit different.
So we hope that you're watching along with us. You can do this on Amazon Prime through IMDb TV or Hulu. Both those have commercials. We're sorry, but not sorry. It's like you're watching in 2004 with the commercials. So I actually kind of like that you guys are stuck with them, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you that immersive experience.
Yeah, maybe not on Hulu if you pay for the premium. Yeah. I don't. I get it with my Spotify because trying to save my pennies where I can. So we hope that you're watching along. If not, it's not a deal breaker. It's your choice. This is not a requirement to watch with us. You can still certainly listen to us with no context at all and just enjoy the ride. Might be a little bit confusing, but we hope that you find some of our jokes funny at the very least. If you're like, I don't even know what the fuck's happening.
You're like, who's Gabby? But whatever she's doing, it's funny.
It's funny. We hope you have a good time either way, watching or not. We also hope that you take time to maybe check out some of the content we're making on Instagram.
We do elaborate
even more than we do in this recap on Instagram, Twitter, and on our website. You can check us out there. So our handle for Instagram is DesperatePod, and at Twitter, it's at Desperate_pod, and our website is just Desperate Podcast. Yeah.
So whatever you do or wherever you listen to your podcasts, we do hope that you rate and review us, especially on Apple Music. That is really important. Give us those 5 stars or 5 apples, however you want to rate it. You know, tell us what we could be doing. Tell us what we could do better. Tell us how much you love us, how pretty we are. We love all of that. How much you love our voices. But you know, we want to hear it all and we want to, get those good reviews, move us up on those Apple charts, make us famous.
We do request that you have somewhat proper grammar
and
capitalization.
I'm going to reiterate that one.
It's not hot to look dumb, you guys.
Nope. Please stop whatever you're doing.
I've had a lot of in-depth conversations this week about why people are doing that. We don't get it.
No, but I can't figure that one out.
Also, you can follow us on Spotify, download our episodes there, just play them on repeat, play them while you work out, play them in your car, play them on mute. I don't care.
Yeah, worth mute it. Just let it just go over and over and over.
Just get, come
give
on.
Us those views.
Yeah, those listens.
We're not desperate or anything.
Yeah. Before, actually, I'm gonna surprise you with this one. Okay. I have a question for you. Since we're a couple episodes deep now, you guys, today we're gonna be doing episode 4, season 1, episode 4. So we are 3 episodes in.
Correct.
And I have a question for you. I'm loving season 1 so far. Mm-hmm. I like season 1 of everything I watch pretty much, though. Yeah. I think that's when it's at its finest, truest point as a series usually.
Yeah.
Like, this is what the writers intended. This is how the pilot, how the spec script looked. But you've watched the whole series. So what is your favorite season of Desperate Housewives?
Oh, that's a good question.
Without any spoilers.
Okay. Anything. No spoilers. I have a soft spot for season 3 because that was like my intro to Desperate Housewives. I love season 1 though. I think like it is like a really great season of TV. So it's probably my 2nd favorite season. So it only goes down from here.
Oh, shit.
No. No. They're all fun. Like, I think all the seasons have a lot to offer. Season 2 is probably one of the more hated seasons though, not to like rain on your parade, but just a heads up. But season 1 is really great. I think it's one of the best like opening seasons of TV ever. Like, I think it hits all those points. You've got like great storylines. You've got a great like overarching storyline. all the character introductions are really solid, as we've kind of just seen even in the first three episodes. But it really does only get better, and I think we're going to see it really start to pick up in these next couple episodes.
Okay, yeah. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for in, like, 2 years when we're on, like, season three.
Yeah, when we finally get to season three.
Maybe 2022 or 2020, whenever we're there. Yeah. I'm excited that, to know that's your favorite season.
I think, and this is, like, it's not technically a spoiler, but Kyle MacLachlan joins the cast, and... I'm always a fan of Kyle MacLachlan. Like, anytime he pops up, like, Sex and the City, Twin Peaks, like, I'm here for it. So that's all I'll say. Like, get excited for that.
I'm going to find a way to weave in all of his characters. Yeah, and somehow, like, this is just another phase of whatever character's life when he was on Wisteria Lane. I can't wait. Yeah, I've heard that there's a time jump.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to that.
It's like... a very famous time jump. It's one of those things where I'm not gonna talk about it.
I'm looking forward to it. We are thrilled that whoever's listening, we're so grateful that you're listening to us. It's been so great to connect with a lot of you. We got some great feedback, and we're glad to hear that you're enjoying it. And I found some Desperate Housewives fans in my life that I didn't know existed. Shout out to you guys. Like, we were just coworkers, or we had just known each other from the past. And then we dropped our episodes and you guys hit me up and you were like, oh my God, I used to love this show. It was so exciting for us to hear and get you guys reinvigorated with Desperate Housewives fandom.
I feel like, yeah, a lot of people have come out of the woodwork that either knew of Desperate Housewives. I shout out to one of my friends who messaged me on Instagram saying she thought it was a show where ladies just got railed. Turns out there's way more than that. And I was like, you know what? I'm glad we could be out here educating people.
She thought it was just porn.
Yeah, like it was
she thought it was just ethical porn.
Ethical porn, yes. Well-paid actresses getting railed.
You knew it was distributed by ABC, so it was ethical.
But yeah, so we're educating people. I had another friend message and say, you know, she loves Desperate. I would have never had that conversation with her if it weren't for this podcast. So you're right. Like, it's, we've got a lot of Desperate Housewives fans out there that no one, I guess they just haven't been talking. We all been in the closet.
So ping us anytime, you guys. Mm-hmm. We're out here creating content.
Yeah.
I mean, I came through with my promise and I made the graph of when Gabby and John were hooking up.
If you haven't gone to our Instagram and looked at this graph, it's very important that you do. And then please, if you're a real fan, email it to Mark Cherry. Yeah. I need his approval. I need him to see this.
Confirm that
we need him to confirm this timeline.
They weren't hooking up that much.
They couldn't have been.
No.
That's what we've learned.
They had several hour time frames.
Like twice a week.
Yeah, it's not that much.
Yeah,
that's just some dude, you know.
Yeah,
he's not your lover. He's just some dude you hang out with sometimes. A couple hours, two times a week. But with all that said, we hope you're gonna enjoy this episode. We are going to break down where we've been to get you prepared for where we're going. Mm-hmm. So the last three episodes, a lot happened. We came to a precipice, really, specifically with Brie.
Yes.
In episode three, they decide to throw a dinner party in Mary Alice Young's honor.
Yeah.
They had this on the calendar and then she died. So I guess the right thing to do is just keep throwing the party, but like make it another week, another block party.
They're like, we're going to, oh my God. Yeah. Every like way to celebrate this woman's life has turned into just like a social event.
They have nothing going on, but Brie throws this dinner party and we expected nothing less from her. It was pristine, but there was a bit of drama. She has been seeing a therapist with her husband, Rex.
Rex.
They've been going to therapy and she wants to keep it a secret because she can't handle people knowing she's not perfect. And there's a flaw. I'll just say it. It's a bit of a flaw.
That is a flaw.
Be a little vulnerable, but he spills the beans that they're not going to tennis practice. That's the lie she told.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're not doing tennis. We're going to therapy. And she loses her shit and she makes it awkward for everyone at this party with the most epic line in television ever. And I'll repeat it every episode.
Let's hear it.
Rex cries after he ejaculates.
I mean, that's shocking to even hear you say just now. I gasped.
You're like, who's Rex? You thought Rex was the one in my life momentarily.
My brain was like, oh man, I feel bad for this Rex guy.
Yeah,
damn.
I feel bad for Julia. She's sleeping with Rex. That is where they leave off. Of course, Rex leaves after this. If there was a question, you guys, that she said this and he was cool with it, he left. He dipped. And
I mean, I would have dipped. I feel like that was the right move on his part.
Yeah. In a panic, Bree goes to her therapist, Dr. Goldfein, and is like, fix my problem with my husband leaving me because I said the most insulting thing I could.
Yeah.
And instead of helping her, he leaves her unattended in his office. And she finds a tape of Mary Alice Young also seeing Dr. Goldfein.
Yeah.
Like, she used to be, Mary Alice Young used to be a patient of this therapist. Mm-hmm. So naturally, Bree steals it. And that's where we left off with Bree. Lynette had an interesting week as well with her husband, Tom. We don't see a lot of Tom. I like when we do see Tom.
I do like the Tom moments.
He's a bit of a surfer douchebag bro, but I like that about him a lot.
I actually, like, Tom seems like the one that I would, like, of all the husbands, like, want to have a conversation with. I don't know. He seems like the one that you could get along with the best.
Yeah.
Like, the most chill. Like, but maybe a little too chill. Maybe that's his problem.
I'd want to have a beer with him.
Yeah,
at the brewery he probably opened after this time in his life.
Yeah.
He was brewing his own beer in the background of all this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the garage, he had an operation where he smoked his weed as well. But
you know that he, like, comes home and he's like, honey, I quit my job because my beer business, it's going to happen. It's taking off. This is it. This is the time.
That's exactly what he did. And Lynette was like, you made me quit my marketing job for this. She's furious. But Tom came home. He was in this last episode. They had a bit of a disagreement about what they should be doing in their relationship, I guess. She wanted him to come to this dinner party, which was a total disaster anyway. Mm-hmm. He was like, I don't want to go to the party. I'm exhausted from selling refrigerators or whatever he does, because he was out traveling.
Yeah.
And
doing business, whatever that means.
Doing business, but Lynette finds out that he was getting margs with the boys after hours. And she's like, well, this is why you're exhausted and hungover, but yet you can't come to the party with me. They disagree about it. And then he's kind of like, well, you can go to the party and I'll babysit. So they come to this compromise. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you can't handle it. And she was pretty much right. But she did mess with him. She gave the kids a bunch of sugar before. And they were off the rails. Misbehaving for him.
I feel like they would have been off the rails either way. Her kids, like, I almost feel like the sugar would, like, help calm them at this point. Like,
yeah, because they have an addiction. They have a sugar addiction.
Yeah, no.
So that's where we left them. Lynette there. She comes home from the party and is like, wow, that was dramatic. I like their relationship, Tom and Lynette. They seem to have very comfortable, intimate relationship, because she dishes on the dirt to him. And she's like, I didn't know that Rex and Bree were so unhappy. But then she's like, are we happy? And he throws her a little marg night after that. They kind of laugh about how much of a doofus he was for going out with his friends.
Yeah.
It's very cute. Although her storyline isn't the most riveting out of them all, it's heartwarming and relatable. And it might not be pushing forward the way some of the other ones are, but it's nice to see. It's a nice respite.
I think it's nice to see, too, like, while their marriage does have problems, at least they have, like the other wives, like Bree and Gabby, their marriages are just, like, total shit shows. At least, like, Tom and Lynette seem to like each other. We got that going for them, and it's kind of refreshing to see that.
Yeah, but where are we at with Susan and Gabby?
Okay, so with Susan, we'll start with Susan, or I will start with Susan. We did not get Edie in this episode, or in the last episode. That was kind of a bummer. I feel like we both are big Edie fans. She always lights up the screen when she shows up. But we did get some fun Susan drama with Carl. We got the introduction, finally. I mean, we see him briefly in the pilot, but, like, not really. And man, oh man.
Carl is hot.
Carl's, like, hot in, like, the douchiest way possible. And I don't know. I have problems. But basically, just, we'll keep it short. You can go listen to our last episode if you want to, like, get the full breakdown.
Yeah, we went a little
We went pretty pedal to the metal with him. But basically, she has kind of, like, a throwdown with Carl and his girlfriend, Brandy, who's, like, the woman that he left her for. And it gets a little petty, but basically, in the mix of all that, in the midst, she ends up naked in a bush, and Mike finds her. And they kind of have a fun little flirt moment and go to the dinner party. which ends up being a disaster. Imagine going to that dinner party on a date. That's literally what they did. It's like a first date. I mean, can't get, like, at least you're watching someone else fall apart. Like, y'all look really good after that.
Yeah. You look just like the best girlfriend ever.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I would never do that.
I would never talk about you crying after ejaculating at a party in front of everybody.
I guess that's maybe a good place to be in. But then your friends are crazy and he knows that your friends are crazy.
Yeah.
That's a bad reflection on you sometimes.
That's true.
Wow. I don't know. Let us we'll know see. What you think, guys. Yeah. Do you think that's good or bad if you bring a first date to a crazy dinner party like this?
Yeah, good? I want people's opinions on this one.
Yeah.
So slide in those DMs.
Yeah.
But basically, Susan decides to let go, like, her anger towards Brandy and Carl. They kind of have, she has, like, an apology moment, and then Brandy and her have a little moment where Brandy just apologizes for being a homewrecker. Just kidding. No, she apologizes for just the bad blood between them, basically. Gabby's storyline last week was a little funky. She gets blackmailed by a 9-year-old. There's a lot of blackmail on the show, I feel like.
Not that a 9-year-old even knows how to blackmail.
I feel like a 9-year-old wouldn't even, like, clock the fact that someone's having an affair.
That 9-year-old wasn't even blackmailing her. I feel like that 9-year-old didn't really say anything that indicated that she was about to dish on seeing them kiss.
Yeah, and I feel like Gabby just, like, made it worse with everything she did in the episode, like trying to explain what a like a mouth hug or what did she call it? Like, what is
like
she?
A high five?
Yeah, high five. Yeah, sorry, not a mouth hug, a high five with your mouth. I was like, ooh, sis. But she buys her a bike and teaches her how to ride it, and that was pretty much her story.
But Gabby, if you haven't listened or seen any of this episode, she cheats on her husband with her 16-year-old gardener.
16. Let's just 16.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep saying
it's illegal. Yeah. Sorry, we should say how disgusted we are with this every time.
It'll never not upset me.
Yeah. So she cheats on her husband with her 16-year-old gardener that I think that she went out of her way to hire and take advantage of.
Low-key, like, she is a predator.
She's a predator, for sure. She's ruining this guy's life, 100%.
Yeah.
But that's why she was trying so hard to get this 9-year-old to shut the fuck up about it.
Because,
like, she's going to be a registered sex offender after this.
Yeah, it's not even, like, ruining her marriage. Like, you're right. I didn't even think about that. Like, that's what she should be worried about is the police finding out. She should
be extremely concerned about that. Yeah,
like, holy shit.
That should be on her mind all the time.
Yep.
That's kind of where we are at with the ladies, so you're not going in completely dry to this episode 4. But if you want to go in with no context, sure. Like, I actually think maybe you could do that on a lot of these episodes.
Yeah, but we do. I feel like we do a good job describing what happened. Maybe look up what they look like, just so you have a face to the name.
And also, so when Mary Alice Young committed suicide episode 1, which sparked off all of these mysteries and dramas, she left behind her suspect husband and her son, Zachary.
Mm-hmm.
They have a storyline going on right now that they're in just a disagreement about how to handle this death. Paul seems rather unaffected. He did a lot of suspicious activity. He dug up something from the pool in the backyard, a trunk, wrapped it in a bunch of duct tape and shit.
Did everything he could to be like, I'm suspicious, I'm hiding something.
He did it in front of the neighbors.
Everything like, he passed in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Susan so came over dumb. And was trying to talk to him, and he's like wrapping up this trunk. He threw it over a bridge. That trunk was found by authorities. Him and his son are in a disagreement because his son found the gun that Mary Alice Young killed herself with and was like, why didn't you get rid of this? Paul didn't run an obituary.
It's all very weird behavior.
Yeah, it's just weird behavior. So something's up with him. We don't know what. And that's most of his storyline. He's trying to sell the house. After episode 3, we saw him nailing in a for sale sign, running from his problems.
Yep.
So we're wondering what's up with that. So before we dive into this episode, we are going to introduce a new segment that we're pretty excited about.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Desperate Deeds. And it has nothing to do with the Desperate Housewives, but we all face moments of desperation in our life.
Oh, yeah.
And if you say that you don't, you're lying. But we wanted to get you warmed up for all the desperation we're going to see. Mm-hmm. And we want to do this every episode with a moment of desperation in our own lives that we've seen in somebody else's life or just in general pop culture. If we can't find one of those two, but I guarantee every week we probably will find something in our own lives.
Yeah, I've had a lot of desperate moments. Not to toot my own horn, but yeah. I got plenty under my belt.
Yes. So we want to include this segment to get you guys warmed up. So I'll go first, and this might evolve over time, but I'm going to start with a really simple one that mm-hmm. never really left my head. I was in college, and I was walking home from class, really not thinking about anything, probably had my headphones in, but I lived in a really small college town called Isla Vista. Shout out anybody from UCSB living in that shithole. And you see, I mean, it's 1 square mile. You'll see people that you know. That campus is big. It's not that big. I was always seeing people I knew, and that was my least favorite part about college. I like knowing strangers. I like just seeing strangers and people I don't know. That's why I live in LA. Mm-hmm. It's better when I don't know you. I was bopping home from college, from my class, and I was walking on the main street, and I saw this dude that I hooked up with. It had been a couple months, but I still just didn't want to speak to him or even acknowledge him. I just didn't want anything to do with him. And I knew that I was going to have to say hello, though, because I couldn't be that rude. I guess I could have ignored him, you guys, but I wasn't. I just
was, that was not the solution that presented itself to you.
I was an avoider. I was like, no, I don't want to fuck. What do I do? And so mm-hmm. I look left and there's this sandwich shop and I'm like, all right, fucking just going to do it. I like pop in there and I bought an entire sandwich because he was walking so slow. I kept like looking out the door waiting for him to pass the entrance and I didn't see him. I'm like, did he pass? Did he not? I'm like, what if he comes and buys a sandwich too? And I'm like texting my friends. I'm like, you guys, I'm like, now I'm swindled into buying a sandwich because there was no line. So it looked weird that I was just standing in the sandwich shop. So mm-hmm. I bought an entire sandwich and just to avoid saying hi to him. I desperately did not want to speak to him, never acknowledge him again.
Was the sandwich good at least?
No, because I ate it. I was sitting there.
Just you ate like, it in shame after yeah, I desperately avoiding
him. I was
this
like,
man.
I can't believe that fucking no. That's the kind of level of desperate I still am to avoid people that I know. Not even, I hooked up with that guy. That was one of the reasons I was avoiding him. Mm-hmm. But like nowadays, it's just people I know. I'm like, yeah. I don't.
So what do you want to do? Have all that awkward small talk? Like, you're still going to have to do that no matter what. So.
Yeah, so that's my desperate moment this week.
Mine is also a college moment. I was talking to this guy on probably Tinder. I don't know. One of those apps early on in
it
college.
It was an app guy?
It was an app guy. That was the worst part. That makes the story so much worse. Okay. All right, folks, buckle up. So this guy told me that he really liked, I believe it was BoJack Horseman. And I was like, yeah, I love that show because I wanted to sound hip.
I can't believe you lied about it.
I don't know why I did. Like, it was so stupid. I'm sitting here telling this, like, physically cringing from this my own story. I was like, yeah, I know that show. I want to seem cool. I don't know. I was like, I'm cool. I watched the new hip shit on Netflix, whatever. And then we were going to, like, I don't know if we were going to hang out the next day or what our plan was, but I ended up staying up all fucking night watching every episode available of BoJack Horseman to make sure that I actually knew what the fuck I was talking about. Worst part of the story is that I do not remember this man's name. Cannot tell you anything about him. We did not end up hanging out. I don't know what happened.
Do you even remember what he looked like?
No. I have no
You didn't even hang out with him after this?
No. Something happened and we just never rescheduled and that was that.
I don't
pathetic.
Know.
Maybe not even desperate. That's just pathetic.
I don't think it's desperate. I think you prepared. I think this was smart of you. You put in preparation and effort. Not that you should have. Like, but you like, didn't even know this guy. But
I think the desperate aspect is like, ladies, you don't need to lie to people. It's okay if you don't like someone's favorite show. It's okay.
It's okay if you don't even like their style.
Yeah. It's okay. You don't have to lie.
But don't tell them you do.
Yeah, then play yourself.
And this is coming from two girls who lied a lot.
Yeah, no, this is not the first time I've lied about liking something, so a guy will be like, yeah, give me a shot. Like, what the fuck? No. They should be lying to us about shit. Like, no.
Jordan, they do.
That's fair. They probably they better.
They do, but they lie about the wrong things.
That's true.
They lie about...
I'm just lying about watching a TV show. They're lying about...
Where they're at, who they're with, their birth name, their birth date. They're just lying about everything.
They're just lying to lie.
But with that, we hope that you're warmed up and ready to see what desperate acts our ladies get into this week. So we're going to hop on over to the television set and watch the episode, and then we'll be right back. So as always, buckle up.
Buckle up.
Season 1, Episode 4, Who's That Woman? A cash-strapped Mrs. Martha Huber tries to blackmail Susan, realizing she had something to do with setting Edie's house on fire. Carlos becomes suspicious that Gabrielle is seeing another man, but targets the wrong man. Lynette contemplates putting her boys on medication, but decides she loves them as they are, even at their worst. Bree lies about her problems with Rex to her children, which leaves her at odds with her son. Together, the women confront Paul about the suspicious note and are dubious about his response. Dubious.
Sex work is not bad.
No, it's not bad. I think we should definitely
We should specify we support sex work.
Absolutely. Every form of it, you know, make sure we take care of all of our workers out there. Everybody deserves to be treated well and with respect, no matter what they do for a living, unless they're, you know, like murdering people.
I just feel like
there was some slut shaming.
We covered a lot of ground that I didn't know we were going to get to. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we hit it, episode 4. Desperate Housewives, I mean, this is early to be hitting some of these topics, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about, I don't know, just featuring a strip club.
Yeah, featuring a strip club with, like, very dated ideas on what a stripper is.
Yeah.
Or who becomes a stripper.
The types of women that become strippers.
I think this is a good example of just dated, some dated notions. This is a show from 2004, I think we have to remember, and this is like, you know, I don't know, maybe we can deep dive more into that later.
Yeah, but. Well, as always, we start off with Mary Alice Young. When Mary Alice Young does a voiceover of what happened, she's like, previously, mm-hmm. on Desperate Housewives, she ended saying everyone has a little dirty laundry. And yeah. I was like, what's going to happen? I guess it had nothing to do with this episode, but I noted that. She says, when I was alive, I had many different identities, lover, wife, and ultimately victim. And she's, I love that she is not letting this go. She's like, I was a victim. Everybody needs to know it. I'm dead now, but you need to know. And we see her on the cover of National Informer, which seems to be a play on National Enquirer. And it says, inside suburban mom suicide. And I'm like, there was nothing juicy has been revealed at all within the neighborhood, between the neighbors. We don't know anything. She just committed suicide. This would never be on National Enquirer.
Like, how would this be in the news? How would this be? Like, there's no news trucks. We're not seeing, like, what? We haven't even seen a damn reporter.
Yeah, besides that block party, yeah. Who knows? She says, labels are important to the living, and this dictates how you see yourself, mm-hmm. like my friend Lynette. She used to see herself as a career woman, super successful, power lunches, wiping out the competition, presentations. She was doing it all. And her new label is satisfying, she says, as a full-time mother. Fell short of what was advertised, though, to Lynette. And labels change, and I think that becomes the thesis of our episode. What do you identify with? What is your label? And maybe how has it changed, mm-hmm. are things that we are going to see.
Yeah.
Lynette gets a call from the school. The teacher tells her that her sons are in trouble, so she rolls up, and she's like, what's going on? What do they do? And the teacher's like, they have ADHD for sure. And Lynette doesn't like this. She threatens to change their teacher. And mm-hmm. this teacher just, I mean, kind of puts it out on the table. She's like, I'm the only one who can handle them. So good luck with that.
Yeah, the teacher's just sitting there, like, smirking at her, like, you don't even know. Like, your threat, you have nothing.
She's like, you can take them out of this school, but I'm your last hope. Yeah. So you better get in line, mom.
Exactly.
And I feel bad for teachers out there because I feel like they get a lot of this. They get harassed by parents every day.
Yeah, parents of, like, terrible children. And Lynette knows her children are fucking monsters. So, like, for her to be, like, kind of giving this teacher a hard time, I'm like, what the, like, you, I don't know.
So Lynette's trying to puff her feathers. It's not working.
Nope.
She's trying to look threatening. It's not. The teacher is like, good luck, lady. Your kids suck. And I don't know why. The teacher is like, put them on meds, or otherwise we're kicking them out. And Lynette is torn about this. Mm-hmm. And I think this, rightly so, why I think that's a big decision as a parent. I don't know. I work in this kind of pharmaceutical advertising, mm-hmm. and it's a big deal to, like, put your kids on any type of medication.
Absolutely. And you don't know how your kids are going to react. And I think Lynette's, like, perfectly reasonable being skeptical about drugging her children.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after we see, well, maybe at first you might be like, oh, no, like, how could this teacher be suggesting that? Then we see what happened, and these little kids painted a girl in their class, Tiffany Axelrod. They painted her blue.
And I mean, like, they didn't just, like, put blue paint on her. Like, this girl's blue from head to toe.
She looks like she's in the Blue Man Group.
Yes, like, she's fucking blue.
So we see that, and you're like, immediately your opinion changes. You're like, maybe she should put them on some medication. Just get that shit under control. Because if I was Tiffany Axelrod, I would have never forgotten that day, and I would have switched schools as that chick. I would have been like, these boys in my class painted me blue. And mom, switch my school. I mean, yeah, that's like, bullying at its finest.
That's like aggressive bullying. And then Lynette's like, why didn't the little girl say anything? It's like, bitch, like, what? We got a victim blame over here?
The girl didn't say anything. Yeah. So her label, Lynette's label changed again. Mother of the boys who painted Tiffany Axelrod blue. So we're prepped to see what labels these other women have.
Yep.
Then we go into our intro and we catch up with the ladies together next. Mm-hmm. And they're listening to the cassette tape that Bree stole. And we hear that Mary Alice is talking to Dr. Goldfein, and she's recounting a dream that she had where she's standing in a river and sees a girl drowning, screaming, Angela. And the doctor's like, who's Angela? And she's like, that's my real name. And I'm like, are you sure it's not Karen?
Yeah, are you sure?
Are you sure?
Double check on that.
Yeah. And Gabby has a pointed reaction, and she's like, Mary Alice Young is a liar. That's not her real name. I saw her driver's license. She wears size 8. She wasn't even depressed. Like, Gabby goes off.
And every 5 seconds, I feel like Gabby's like, we should call the police. Like, yeah. She just doesn't want to deal with it. She has no interest. I think she's like, let's give this to the cops. I'm done.
Hand it over. I think I'm Gabby, though. If I was in this situation, I'd be like, girls, why? I don't want to keep hanging out with you.
She's like, I'm done with this.
Every time they're trying to solve this mystery is a reason that they have to hang out. And Gabby's like, fuck, let's just hand it over to the police. I'm tired of seeing you guys.
She's over it.
So they see Paul watering the yard, and Susan is like, we should show him the note. And Lynette's like, should we? Bree says, now or never. Paul's selling the place at a low asking price. And Gabby is like, the police.
Yeah.
So
she's literally on the phone with the cops being like, listen to these ladies.
Yeah. So who are you in this situation?
I don't know. I feel like I don't want to be Susan. I don't want to be like so wrapped up like Susan is. I feel like maybe I'd be Brie, like I'm the one that stole the tape and was just kind of like, this is just fun. This is just kind of fun for me. Spicing up her day.
It is spicing up her day because she closes out and she's like, I do love what Paul's done with that lawn, though.
I know.
Like she got distracted real easily.
Yeah.
This is all fun and games for her.
Also, quick side note, Susan's wearing a pink shirt with pink jeans.
I noticed that. I want to know who the costume designer is because she had the monochromatic outfit and she was looking fine.
I was like very distracted by the choice, but you know what, good for her.
Yeah. But Gabby comes out and says it, and she's like, Paul is a creep, we shouldn't involve him. And she's like, you know when you say a really controversial opinion about somebody that your friends all know and you're like,
yeah
that person kind of sucks, and you're like waiting for people to agree with you,
and then they don't.
They kind of are like,
like, well, I kind of like them, like they say shit like that.
That's all. Like, there was a hard silence, there was a gap, and the girls were like, yeah, I guess, like,
yeah,
he does have a dark entity around him. But yeah, Gabby's like, I fucking hate that household. Gabby doesn't like any of it. So they separate there, and then we jump into all their own storylines.
Mm-hmm.
Susan's storyline is that she ends up getting blackmailed by Mrs. Martha Huber, because if we recall, she burned down Edie's house on accident, but maybe on purpose.
Kind of like, she didn't seem to care that much. So I feel like maybe she's not that remorseful. Like,
not at all.
Maybe not like she, maybe not on purpose, but she's not mad about it.
I mean, what do you do if you commit arson?
Yeah.
You move on.
Just gotta move on with your
life.
They're
never gonna catch you.
Yeah. But basically, like, Martha found that the measuring cup. So she somehow jumped to the conclusion that that means Susan must have burned the house down.
Yeah, Mrs. Martha Huber is taking care of Edie now that her house is burned down. Mm-hmm. And this is costing her a lot of money, although I would never pay for the groceries of... It sounds like Mrs. Martha Huber is paying for Edie's groceries and shit.
I feel like Edie should be paying Martha some money for staying there.
Yeah, so this inspires Mrs. Martha Huber to connect the dots, and maybe she's a smart cookie. It sounds like it. She's like, this measuring cup, and Julie and Susan just bought a new measuring cup, and we have this burnt one. She connected all the dots, and she's like, I'm gonna profit off of this tragedy.
Yeah.
And cause a ruckus. So that's what she does, and this is all of Susan's storyline. And I think maybe her label change here was being a victim to mm-hmm. not being a victim of this blackmail, because at the beginning she's like, what do I do?
Yeah.
She thinks on her feet and she fixes this situation.
Yeah, I mean, they get the measuring cup back and Martha
gets pissy about it. Susan shows up yeah. at the end. She says, what measuring cup? Because Miss Martha Huber is like, you stole the evidence. I had my collateral. You stole my collateral.
Yeah.
Susan gets the measuring cup back and mm-hmm. fixes the whole situation so she can't be blackmailed. She shows up. Miss Martha Huber confronts her, and she's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And
yeah. And basically Susan's like, we're not talking. Like, we're just going to be cordial. And that's that on that.
Yeah. So there were a couple notable things mm-hmm. besides the measuring cup. Like, that's the top line. But yeah. Another thing that sparks everything off is that Susan's doing dishes and she's like watching Mike shirtless, and all these men in this neighborhood are gardening shirtless. I've noticed it's a thing.
You have to. That's like the rule of Wisteria Lane. If you're going to be out gardening, you better be shirtless.
You're shirtless
because the ladies need something to look at.
And sweaty. So she's watching him, and Julie, my favorite housewife, not a housewife yet,
not an actual housewife,
not ever a housewife, maybe. She comes up and she's like, Mom, when are you just going to really ask him out? She gives her mom shit all the time.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I can only keep this up until noon of just watching him, and then I'm going to go over there and beg him to love me. And
yeah.
I'm like, Susan, you disappoint me every time. But we see our competition. We see
Miss Edie washing her car, doing the whole car wash, like almost like a parody
at the car wash.
Yeah. I mean, she's like wiping her, or she's like wringing out the sponge on her boobs and her face, and I'm like, what the
she
fuck?
Really, yes, she has some knockers, and she is wringing that sponge out on them for no apparent good reason.
Yeah, so Susan decides to like walk over there and talk to Mike, ask him out, or get him to ask her out.
Yeah.
She has like a piece of junk mail. That's her
Yeah,
excuse.
That Julie provided.
Yeah.
Because Julie was like, you want an in? I stole his mail.
And I'm
like, that's illegal as
I'm
fuck.
I'm like, damn, Julie, okay. And Edie, my favorite part of all of that is Edie like going frustrated to Martha Huber, being like,
yeah,
she's throwing herself at him. I'm like, bitch, you were naked in your front yard washing your car.
We hear the word desperate.
Yeah.
She says, I wish Susan wasn't so desperate. I want to shoot a deer with her fucking doe eyes. Like, they went hard.
I know, like, Edie's like aggressive as fuck, but also like, okay, if Susan's desperate for taking him a piece of mail, what are you for fucking having like a pornographic car wash show?
She was washing it like Paris Hilton and the Carl's Jr.
That's
ad.
What I'm saying. Yes, that's what it reminded me of, actually.
She's like smashing a
yes. All she needed was a burger, like, and barbecue sauce yes. all over her body. Oh my god.
And I do have to say, Mike noticed her washing her car, looking sexy, until Susan walked over. And he was alert. He likes Susan, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
The mail that he opens are tickets to a movie festival. And he kind of invites her to the movie festival in his driveway.
Yeah,
so
no, he
this
totally does.
Seems like a done deal that they're going to go on a date. But
yeah.
then the rest of the episode, they don't act like this happened. Because he asks her out two more times about going. He's like, you like Alfred Hitchcock?
And then Billy Wilder. This man's got a thing for, like, old movies. Like, he really likes old movies. I was like, okay.
Yeah, so Yes, that happens. He gets these tickets, and the rest of their storyline is Mike asking her out and Susan being like, I don't know. But yeah. I'm like, they confirmed the date in this
scene. I thought they agreed to go.
I thought they agreed.
Part of me is almost like, did they go on one date? Because I just can't fat. Like, do they both have amnesia? Like, what's
going
on?
They both are a little bit off. I don't know, off kilter with each other, yeah, it seems like.
But for sure.
My favorite line, yeah, is when he's at the store. He sees her at the store later and tries to ask her out again. And he's like, do you like Alfred Hitchcock? And I'm like, this feels like me in film school. I studied film. And this is like how.
Hot moment too.
Yeah, this is how somebody in my film class would have like fucking asked me out. And I'm like, I had flashbacks. I'm like,
I'm like, great.
Because you never really like it. Like, sometimes you just want some mindless drama and this guy's trying to take you to the old mood. Like, do you like Fellini? You're like stuck watching a couple argue for 3 hours. It's terrible. But so, yeah, Edie calls her desperate. The whole town is calling her desperate for talking to Mike in public.
Maybe that's why Susan's so, like, aside from the Martha storyline, like, why Susan's so finicky about, like, making the moves? Because this town's judgmental as fuck. She's single. He's single. They're both good looking. What's the big deal that they flirt?
They should be fucking. If I was their neighbor, I'd be like, please fuck.
Yeah.
Do it.
I'd be rooting for them. I'd be the wife in the other window, like, watching it all play out. Like, oh, shit. Like, doing her dishes.
I, like, go masturbate. Yeah.
I'm that's, like, the only action. There's, like, this housewife we haven't met yet, and she's just watching all of this from her window, like, getting off to it. That's, like,
we the are only the other joy. Housewife.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe that, yeah.
We're like, make a video.
Yeah.
cam couple.
Oh, my God.
They are hot, though.
They are.
So Edie complains. Martha Huber has wheels turning in her head about this other collateral. Mm-hmm. She's like, I have a measuring cup. I know Susan likes Mike. I'm going to make her life hell. So she does. She goes over with a mincemeat pie and, like, threatens her, talking about the origin of the words mincemeat. Or, like, what that is, it's all, I don't know, kind of not that.
It's a bit theatrical, Martha. You can tone it down. You know what was loud as fuck, though? Her shirts.
Her shirts are loud, yes.
I lost my mind when she did the mincemeat scene, because she's wearing one of those shirts that's, like, it looks like an art piece that's been slapped onto a print. And then, like, there was, like, sequins randomly on it.
Yeah.
And then, like, there was another shirt she was wearing that looked like Jack and Sally, Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, that was the color scheme. It was patchy like that. And I was like, what's going on?
It used to be a piece of art in a museum, and then it stopped.
She buys all her clothes from the gift shops at museums where they put that stuff on a print.
Yeah, she hopes somebody brings it up in conversation. Mm-hmm. Eventually, nobody ever does.
She's like, maybe someone will approach me with this loud as fuck shirt I'm wearing today.
It is, but I feel like people our age are wearing shit like that. It's like back in style. Oh, they're wearing like geriatric clothing. So this is the first attempt Miss Martha Huber has at blackmailing, and it kind of works. Like, Susan fucking panics. She decides, like, whatever, like, nothing's really happened. Then she goes to the store, and this is where Mike drops his Alfred Hitchcock line. She brushes him off. She's like, I don't really know. And he's like, okay.
I don't know why she did that. Bye. Even Martha's like, why'd you do that?
Yeah, Miss Martha was like, that's pathetic that on my account you rejected him.
I'm like, what just happened? Why?
Miss Martha Huber also wants them to fuck, but she doesn't want to say it.
I know, she's Team Susan.
Yeah. She's like, get Edie. That's the whole thing. Miss Martha Huber wants Edie out of her house. It's causing her too much money. It's costing her too much money. She's at the store, they're in line, and she's like, Edie's eating me out of house and home. And Susan's like, what the fuck do you want me to do? And she removes that little divider in between their groceries, and Susan buys all her groceries.
I know. Susan fucking, like, she caves, like, immediately. Like, okay, my question is, does Martha even have, like, enough evidence to actually do anything?
Martha's fingerprints are all over that measuring cup now. Do you realize she's touched it so many times? She's had it in her little purse bag to bring it over.
Oh, my God, you're right.
It's all, like, no. Susan couldn't be convicted that that was her measuring cup. And if she was, I would have lied. Okay, I'm sorry, you guys. I would have lied. If the police were like, is this your measuring cup? I would have been like, Edie borrowed it, like, 3 months ago.
Yeah, worst case. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no, like, it's, this is not an issue. This is a non-issue. Like, watching this quote-unquote blackmail, there's not enough evidence. There's nothing. It's literally nothing.
Yeah. Everybody is bad in this town at blackmailing. Apparently. Yes. I feel like we could bury a body better than Paul. We could blackmail better than these bitches.
Yes.
We could lie. If we were being blackmailed, I think we could lie our way out of it.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
I think we know. Maybe I should move to suburbia.
Yeah.
I think I would
flex, we'd be better at it than these ladies.
On everyone. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Miss Martha Huber is, like, stalking and harassing Susan at the store, at her house. And then she leaves Susan a voicemail. The stalking doesn't stop. She says, "My water heater broke. It's $600. Just lie, let you know, Susan." Like,
yeah, like basically being like, "So you're going to cough up that money?"
Yeah, where's that check at? Get the checkbook out. So, and she's like, "You're screening my calls." She like screams.
She's like, "That's tacky." Yeah, yeah. I'm like, "All right, bitch." Like, okay, what?
I screen my calls every day. And this is when Susan really starts to panic because she has that chihuahua energy.
She has like the bug eye nervousness, like, and wakes her poor daughter up to take care of it because Susan can't apparently figure out what to do. Even though, like, the obvious solution is to just take the damn measuring cup or just not worry about it. But she needs her daughter to, like, solve this for her.
Julie is the mom here in every situation. Yeah,
Julie totally is.
So she says, "I think I'm being blackmailed." And I'm like, "You think? What makes you think that? What? You are being blackmailed." And she tells Julie, "I think we should go to the police." And Julie's, like, fucking, she's half asleep. She's like you in the morning before you've had your coffee. Yeah. She's like, "Just don't do, like, you're on that peak annoyance."
Yeah.
So you're like, "Don't do that. That's dumb.
Also, like, you sound ridiculous, mom." Like,
yeah, okay, fuck? Mom.
Yeah, like, all right.
And she's like, "It's an accident. I'll get away with it and they'll let me off." But Julie comes in with a hard fact, and it's very telling of her relationship with her father. And she says, "Well, if that happens, I'm going to have to go live with dad. And I can't have that." No. And I was like, whoa, this turned on a dime. Yeah. I feel a type of way after she says this. And I'm like, dang. And I have divorced parents, so it hit extra hard. I was like, ooh, I know that feeling. Yeah. You're like, "I don't want to go over to that person's house." So they come up with a plan to steal the measuring cup back, which they do successfully, but not without a little snafu in between, because Mike is always running or gardening or doing something where he's sweaty.
Everything but plumbing, it feels like.
He doesn't plumb it. I've never seen him working. Nope. He doesn't even have one of those vans.
No, he has a truck.
Yeah, so Mike runs up and he tries again to ask Susan out, even though, as we said, aren't they already going on a date from that first mail encounter? The piece of mail.
Yeah.
That encounter. So he rolls up while they're doing the operation to get the metric cup back. And he is like, "Are you trying to..." This is when he brings up Billy Wilder. Is that it? He's like, "What about Billy Wilder? There's a Billy Wilder special." Susan is shaking because she wants Julie to get out of the house without being seen. And she agrees to go on the date because nobody is around to compromise it, finally.
Yeah.
And up until Edie comes home.
Yeah, and then Edie almost ruins everything by walking into Martha's house. So she, like, Susan just does, like, I mean, there's so many ways she could have gotten Edie to not go into the damn house. But what does she do? She fucking invites her on the date and then gives her her, like, gives her her own ticket. I don't know. Like,
she gives away the ticket because Mike is like, "I only had two tickets."
Because he clearly doesn't want to go with Edie.
Yeah.
If I were Edie, I would have seen Mike's reaction to that and been like, "I'm good. I don't want to go."
I mean, but at the end, Mike goes, I think. I think either way, he's on a hot date with a woman, and that's what he thought in his head.
I guess, like, if a guy, like, found out, "Oh, I have to go, I'm going with you instead," and he literally goes, "Sure, I guess." Like, I would be like, "No, that's not the energy I want." But literally, Edie, like, shrugs off her blazer and is like, she slinks on over to him.
Yeah, she is confident. I like Edie's confidence.
I do, too.
I have nothing else to say. I found that you guys are more Team Susan. We had 60-40 split Team Susan.
Honestly, I thought it would go more towards Susan. So, yeah, I'm surprised.
I was a little bit surprised, too, but that was only after the pilot when we pulled. So
that's true.
Maybe as the weeks progress, we'll get more. The opinions will change.
Yeah.
But So she gives away the ticket. It's a loss, but she's doing this for her daughter. So I do have some respect there.
Yeah, because I got to get that cup. I mean, yeah. I get it. Like, desperate times call for desperate measures.
With a measuring cup.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh. And the desperate. Wow.
Too punny.
Yikes. Yeah. All right, folks. That's all.
Sorry, you can tune out. I'm signing off. So Julie secures the bag, though. She reveals from underneath her frisbee that she has a burnt measuring cup. Miss Martha Huber comes over later that night fuming, just absolutely about to tear something apart. She's like, you broke and entered. And I'm like, you broke and entered episode one, Miss Martha Huber.
Yeah, that's her move. That's, maybe that's why she's mad.
She's like, you can't do
she's
that.
She's like, that's my thing.
Yeah, so Susan's like, I don't know what you're talking about. She says, I'll keep being a good neighbor, but inside I'm quietly but decidedly hating your guts. And I'm like, Susan.
No, that was pretty savage. Savage move on Susan's end.
I don't usually say that about Susan either.
No, this is the rare moment where Susan actually plays things really cool.
Yeah. And so Miss Huber is falling apart and she walks her sorry ass home, which is usually what I say about Susan.
Yeah.
Miss Huber walks her sorry ass home. And has to keep paying for Edie. So our next housewife, we can just hit Lynette, who Mary Alice Young described it perfectly. Lynette used to be this career woman, and now she's a stay-at-home mom. And that's a huge identity shift. Mm-hmm. And what does this mean for Lynette? And how does she view herself? Because it does matter how you view yourself, and it matters how other people view you. I mean, maybe it doesn't to you, but...
No, you know, it does. I also think, like, she struggles with, like, labeling her children, like in her storyline.
Yeah,
like she's dealing with the ADD situation, which I guess if she has the medication, her kids have been diagnosed at this point.
Yeah, she pulls out the medication at a certain point. She's
I think she does struggle with, like, once you slap that label on your kid as, like, being medicated or having ADD, like, what does that do to your kids, and what does that say about you as a mother? Like, I think she's struggling with, like, the decision to make as a parent in this situation.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right.
Like, a lot of layers to her storyline in that sense.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I didn't even spend a second thinking about that. And I work in pharmaceuticals, and I'm like, what does that mean to have your kids medicated? Yeah. And what does that say about you as a parent? And I feel like to some parents that could feel like a failure. Mm-hmm. And it's not your fault. You can't help how your kids are, and if they need help, and that's okay to need help.
And I think, like, I mean, okay, I'm not a mom. I'm not married.
Are you sure?
Let me double check on that. But looking at Lynette's situation with her kids, like, her kids are pretty hyperactive. Like, that's literally her plot, like, that her kids are insane. So I feel like maybe, like, they need something. I feel like maybe it's not medication, but they're, I don't know. Like, I'm not anti-medication by any means.
Meditation.
I don't know. Because I feel like they're, like, not learning in school. Like, they're going to be behind. Like, their craziness is, like, going to limit them at this point.
I mean, they're literally destroying classrooms.
Yeah.
That's when next time we
see her. Assaulting other children.
Yeah. We see her get called back to school because the boys refuse to be separated, which was their solution, to separate the boys. And the teacher can't handle them, and the teacher's outside, like, eating a Snickers or something. And Lynette's,
she's checked,
like,
out. She's over it.
Lynette's like, what the fuck's going on? Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, I can't wrestle your children, so unless you want to get in there and do it.
Like, I think she's, like, smirking at Lynette because, like, Lynette, as we talked about in the opening, kind of came at the teacher a little bit.
Yeah.
And the teacher's like, you know what? I've done, like, it's not my job to handle this level of, like, craziness. Yeah.
So Lynette goes in there and handles it, because if this teacher can't slap her kid, she sure as fuck will.
Yeah.
So she goes in and we see her, like, pulling her kid. He's holding onto a table. Oh, it was dramatic. Man. But she does this, she handles the situation, and then she sits down and has a moment with Bree that it turns around. It's pretty heartfelt scene. I almost cried.
Yeah.
I'll admit it, because she's saying, the school and the doctor think they need me medicated, and what does that say about me? I used to run a company of 85 people, and I can't even handle these two kids. And that feels like a failure probably.
No, and I think like it's like she gave up the thing that she knew she was good at, and now she's struggling to like figure out what am I without that, because I don't know if I'm even a good mother at this point.
Yeah.
And I think Bree's like very reassuring though, and says like, I like her comment, like, your kids are a challenge. And it's not a reflection on Lynette. Like, some, my dad told me one time, he's like, sometimes some kids just suck, like some kids just have bad energy, like they might have good parents, bad parents, whatever. But, like, sometimes people just, like, kind of are assholes. And that's what her kids seem to be. Because I feel like Lynette's not, like, I don't know what she's doing to make them act this way.
I don't think Lynette's a bad mom. And I think it's just hard to be a parent. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'd love to have a parent on here and talk about this. Because I can't imagine how that feels. Like, you were so good at something. And then you, this is a job. Being a parent is a job. Mm-hmm. You're not killing it. And you must have an identity crisis. Mm-hmm. Like, who am I if I can't even relate to my kids? And I've heard about having postpartum depression where you feel like your kids are not even your own.
Yeah.
And you have, like, a dissociation and how that might affect you. It just affects you being a parent. And, like, I can't imagine. So that's kind of what this moment is about, is, like, what does it mean now that I can't get it under control? Bree is pretty affirming and supportive, but the mug is what got me teary-eyed. She has this mug, and Lynette says, well, if I medicate my kids, what if they're not the same anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the identity crisis of her children comes in. She's like, what if I give them the meds and they change and they don't do things like make me this mug?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're terrible 99% of the time, but the other 1%, they're nice to me.
Yeah.
And they love me and they show me affection by doing these things. And Bree's like, your mug is leaking. And she's like, but I like this leaky mug.
Yeah. I mean, I'll keep it anonymous for obvious reasons, but I, growing up, had a friend who had like ADD, and like his family, he had the option to take medication. He did for a while, but it did suck the creativity out of him.
Yeah.
Like, he was very artistic and, like, wasn't able to do it on the medication. So it's, like, hearing Lynette say that, it's, like, that's actually, like, beautiful that she loves her kids enough to, like, want them to be themselves. And, like, oh, now I'm going to cry.
I know.
Damn, I'm getting teary out of
it. It's making us emotional.
Okay, well.
Hurry up. Tell a joke. Hurry up.
Yeah. No, but it's, like, she kind of has to struggle with, like, do I want to make my life easier or do I want them to be themselves? And, I like, she ultimately makes the decision to not give them the medication.
Yeah.
And she just drinks, you know, a bunch of wine, which I don't know, that might be a slippery slope too.
Yeah. Lynette is an alcoholic.
Yeah, like, we're going down a different direction here.
Yeah, so she doesn't medicate them, and instead she does some self-medication. Mm-hmm. And that's the gist of her storyline, and I think that progressed her further as a character.
Yeah, it was like a pretty simple plot line comparatively. Like we just explained Susan's, and it was like a lot of moments, whereas Lynette's weren't as many, but it did feel,
it was deeper.
Yeah, I think that was like probably her strongest storyline we've seen so far.
Yeah. So while they're talking about this, that her sons, the other girls bust in and they revisit Paul. And they're like, we're going to tell him about the note. So
they invite him over for coffee, right?
Yeah. The girls bust in and they're like, Paul's coming over. We have a tight five to get ready.
They're like, whatever conversation y'all were having, time to stop.
I know.
Like,
Lynette's about to cry. Yeah. Like, her mug is leaking everywhere. And they're like, Paul is coming over. So they ask him about him selling his house. He's like, too many painful memories. They do tell him about the note. They're like, when we packed shit, we found this note. And I have to say, production put, like, no effort into this note. It's, like, on an 8.5 by 11 in Sharpie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, they couldn't even make it cooler.
No, it's, like, the most boring blackmail note of all time.
Yeah, so Paul cries and leaves.
He reacts very poorly.
Yeah.
Naturally.
He doesn't say anything, even. No. He just takes the note and leaves, so that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that happened after that conversation.
Yeah.
And next up, we have Bree.
Yeah, so Bree's story pretty much just picks up exactly where it left off. Like, Rex has moved out, or he's living in a motel. Like, he's not staying at the house.
Motel 6.
Yeah, and, like, but she's not, again, you'd think she'd learn from the tennis lessons, but she's not being straightforward with their kids, Andrew and Danielle. Like, they don't, like, she keeps making up a reason for why he's gone. Like, oh, he's at a conference, or he's at this. It's like, they're not just telling them, even though very clearly something's wrong.
Yeah, Bree's storyline is my favorite of the series that I've seen so far. Of the four episodes, this storyline in episode 4 with Bree, I didn't think that she could top anything
after
saying her husband cries after he ejaculates.
Yeah, because, like, basically, like, her son is just, like, acting out. which culminates in my favorite scene. My favorite part is when she breaks down his door. Dude, she fucking kicks the shit out of that door.
Strength.
Yeah, she gets so, yeah, so like basically, like, to sum it up, Andrew, her son's acting out. He's like being kind of a jerk to her.
Yeah, he is like, "Mom, you're lying about dad moving out, and I don't like that." And he starts acting up.
Yeah, and she hears him on the phone. She has Danielle call him one night because he's not there.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Is he at a bar?" And so she doesn't know where he is, so she fucking kicks that door down in his room to look for any hint.
It looked like we were in an action show.
The way it was shot. Like, the way it was shot was hilarious. I was like, oh, my God.
There was, like, a special angle, like, lots of cuts.
Yeah. Whoever, like, staged that felt real proud of themselves.
She ravaged through his room, and she found a packet of matches.
Which, like, this guy's such an idiot. Why is he taking home souvenirs? Like, what is he doing?
He doesn't even smoke cigarettes. Like,
oh, my God.
So, it's a packet of matches from, I'm going to note the strip club's name.
Yep.
Topsy Turvy.
That was not good design.
It was terrible.
It literally looked like they almost printed it on a piece of paper and taped it to matches.
They, like, made it in Word.
Yeah, like, no, they did. It's like, something I would make. Like, I can't, I'm, like, the worst. Like, no,
it's
terrible.
It's a font in Word.
With, like, a clip art of a shoe and a martini glass or something. It was so stupid.
The storyline was bananas, you guys.
Like, it just, like, it doesn't let up. Like, Bree's story does not let up.
So after she kicks down the door, she finds him. She finds that packet of matches and she drives over there.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds her son with two of his friends. He didn't go there alone. He's with his buds.
Yeah, they're just at the strip club sitting and getting their dicks hard together. I don't know. Like, what are they even doing? Like, whenever I see, like, a group of dudes at a strip club. Sorry, this is just a side note.
It's not a bachelor party. Unless
no,
it's a bachelor party.
It's just
party.
Like these guys that actively go to a strip club to sit there and, like, get hard together and then not do anything about it. Like, I'm just like, what's going on?
They're like having a beer and this chick is like, first of all, I don't even have respect for them. It's not even a titty bar. Like, there's, she's in a, and I know it's ABC and they couldn't show kids, but like,
they're in, like, full lingerie.
Yeah, they're in full lingerie, which, like, good, it's for, still sexy. Whatever, but you never, okay, if you've ever.
TV strip clubs, like, regular network TV strip clubs, they're never that. They're, like, too well lit. Like,
this would be, I guess, if you're a 16-year-old, like, this would be the strip club you go to. Like, it's kind of innocent. Yeah. Like,
well, it's the only one letting them in.
Yeah, so, okay,
it's the only one that is, believes that these 13-year-old kids look like 21-year-olds.
Because the biggest question we have is, like, he's 16. We think he's 16. He could be 18. I don't really know. He's young. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think he turned into a proud boy. He wears exclusively Ralph Lauren. He wears exclusively Ralph Lauren polo.
Yeah.
He looks young, and the strip club let him in and is letting him have a beer.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd be like, this is a fake ID. Like, I don't care. Like, if I was a bartender, I'd be like, this is clearly fake.
I guess they were strapped for cash. They're just letting in minors. Yeah. So she comes in and she's like, what's up, boys? And the two other boys piss their pants. Mm-hmm. Andrew, the son, is like, Mom, what the fuck? He's like, what are you doing here?
And, like, he's acting like she's just going to leave them. Like, she's going to be like, oh, you're embarrassed? Sure, I'll go home. Enjoy the strip club for the rest of the night. Like, that's, like, almost what he's implying when he's like, you're embarrassing me.
Yeah, he's so embarrassed. And then she calls out the friend. She's like, Heath, nice solo at church last week. And I'm like, she's out for blood. Yeah. I love you,
Petty
Bree.
Queen. That was a queen moment right there.
But these are the dudes you find at strip clubs. Like, they moonlight as, like, a nice, and I'm going to say moonlight, even though they're at the strip club moonlight. Are they moonlighting as a gross dude or are they moonlighting as a good dude?
Yeah, and I want to reiterate, we don't have a problem with, like, a strip club. It's the people that, like,
no,
these boys that fucking frequent this shit. Or, like,
I don't have a
creepy
problem.
Ass man. The man sitting next to Andrew
was creepy.
Creepy ass man.
I don't have a problem with a strip club at all, but it's like, yeah, it's the patrons sometimes, and not all of them. I think
no, not all of them,
I've
but a lot
to
of
strip
them.
Strip club, women and men both go, but it's like the dude. There's
the dudes that go and, like, take off their wedding ring.
Yes, and, like,
like, they're gonna somehow, like, that stripper's
or
actually,
like,
in love with them.
16-year that Heath had a girlfriend. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
His little high school sweetheart's not gonna be loving that.
No, he's gross. We don't know that, but that's my theory.
I mean, his name's Heath, and he sings at church, and then he goes to strip clubs at night. I'm gonna say he sucks.
But we all knew a Heath.
Yeah.
So basically, Bree doesn't let up. Heath and Ian dip because they're like, oh no, like your mom's here.
Yeah, they're not vibing. I kind of probably would have been, I would have been like, peace. Good luck, yeah, Andrew. If I were Andrew, I'd be like, yeah, we should leave.
I would have never spoken to Andrew again.
Yeah, I would have been like, your mom's, yeah, we're not doing this.
Frightening.
Yeah.
So she sits down and he's like, how did you find me here? And she throws the mattress on the table. And he's like, you went in my room? And I'm like, okay, big boy.
Yeah.
Where did he have, just ones on him? Where did he get the money to, like, pay the strippers? I mean, the scene is uncanny overall. But then Bree goes in. And she goes in on the strippers. She tries to make Andrew feel bad for being at the strip club. And she's like, how do you think this woman got here? Can you imagine, like, the violence and abuse and drug use that she faced, all like, be on this stage?
All the stereotypes of, like, stripping and strippers.
Yeah. Before she does this, she orders a glass of Chardonnay.
The house Chardonnay.
She sits her tiny butt down. Yeah. And they poured her a glass of Barefoot.
Yeah.
Barefoot wine. So she's... yeah, she shames the stripper, and Andrew's like, stop, it won't work, I'm still hard. And she's like, and she doesn't stop at all. And the guy next to her,
he's getting uncomfortable because he's creepy.
Getting uncomfortable, and he looks at Andrew, and he's like, get this chick out of here, she's ruining it for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up leaving. Because that guy says something. I don't know what Andrew was planning to do. Was he just planning to continue to sit there? Did she get her glass? I don't remember, but they dipped. After that, we see them have a moment at home because after she broke down that door, I like to think that her superhuman strength was just too much and she broke it off of the hinges too.
Yeah, so the door's not, they need a handyman to come fix his door.
Yeah, Andrew no longer gets a door because he was at a strip club when he was 16. She's in there cleaning up his room or helping him clean his room, and she sits down and they do have a heartfelt talk about why this maybe happened.
And I think, like, their talk actually is, like, good. Like, Andrew does admit that he, like, doesn't fully blame his mom, and, like, he just wishes, like, he just misses his dad and, like, wants to know what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still a little asshole, but at least he admits that.
I think they both are a little bit vulnerable here because we see her at the beginning being typical Bree, like lying about shit, pretending things are perfect.
Yeah.
And Andrew is the first one to show his cards and says, I just miss dad and I don't want this to happen and I don't want you to be divorced and I want him to come home. And she says, I feel the same way. And like, I'm sorry that I lied to you, kind of. And I think this is where Bree's label changes from maybe being that perfect girl that she wants to being a vulnerable mother that is relating to her son.
Yeah.
So that is where I see her label change. It wasn't as prominent as some of these other ones, but it was a little bit more discreet, as things are with Bree, I guess. Mm-hmm. She's pretty much the same character no matter what.
Yeah.
But her relating to her son was a big breakthrough. But Andrew is a little bit broody also. He's like
super dramatic. Like, I don't know. He is like a very moody, like, teenager.
She's like, you're never going to speak to me again. You're still mad at me about the strip club. And he's like, I'm mad at you for 7,000 other things too.
Yeah,
and
I'm
like, okay. Dramatic ass bitch.
He's like, you never made me navy bean soup.
Yeah. You almost killed our dad.
Yeah.
you made all of our clothes since the time we were children. I hate it. I just want Ralph Lauren.
Yeah. God damn. He's like, I want to pop my fucking collar.
So he doesn't get his door back. His friends have all stopped talking to him. I'm interested to see what happens with Andrew as we progress through time. So I like Bree's storyline. I thought this was the most hilarious thing I'd seen in a long time. They're at this strip club. It's so uncanny. But that's where we leave her. And then last but not least, always the most, Gabby. Gabby Solis. I liked this one too.
I really liked the storyline.
This was a little bit more on the nose about the identity. Mm-hmm. Carlos mistakes the identity of who he believes Gabby is cheating on him with.
Yeah.
He nearly catches Gabby and John doing their thing, doing their very illegal thing. And instead of, like, assuming it was John that he almost caught her with, he thinks it's the cable guy. and he targets the cable guy and honestly assaults him.
Commits a hate crime unintentionally.
Yeah, hate crime.
But I have a lot to say. I have a lot to say about the stuff that happens in this episode, the storyline. I also want to note that their story ends with him basically threatening Gabby.
Yeah.
Because they're in the bathtub together and she sees the hate crime on the TV basically being reported on.
Yeah.
And the sketch looks like Carlos and he goes like, is there something you wanted to ask me? And she's like, nope. And I'm like, that's low-key scary. Like, that would be
I'd be scared.
So, like, their story, like, Gabby's storyline this week is, I mean, it's interesting. We get a little more Carlos than, like, previous, I guess, the past couple.
Yeah, we see a different side of him.
Yeah.
Maybe the same side. We dive deeper into the same side we've seen.
Yeah. But to go back kind of to the beginning of Gabby's plot in this episode, I would like to point out the return of too many sex candles.
Oh, in the bathtub?
Yes.
I didn't notice the candles.
Oh, my God. Julia, there were at least, like, 40, 50 candles in that bathroom. I mean, they had little tables. There's when Carlos gets there after the cable guy falls down, she's, like, putting the tables away and blowing out the millions of candles. And I'm sitting here like, okay, you're having an affair, right? Mm-hmm. Which I don't. To each their own. Especially maybe don't do it with underage people, but yeah. Affairs in general are not cool.
Affair, fine. Yeah. Underage person, no.
Affairs in general, maybe don't, but whatever. Like, she and John have almost been caught at this point. She got quote-unquote blackmailed. That's still up for debate, but quote-unquote blackmailed by a child. She, and then, like, John has almost been caught. Remember, he's, like, butt naked outside of their house that day.
Neighbors saw his ass.
So you've almost been caught. Maybe don't have your little lover over in the bathtub with 50 like, if Carlos came home early again, like, they'd be fucked.
Yeah.
There's no way.
And if you look at my chart, you'll see that this encounter had to be between the hours of, like, 3 and 5 in the afternoon.
Well, and then they do get caught because the reason why Carlos is suspicious about the cable guy is, one, he got there late, but two, he notices all the candles in the bath and
the fucking sock under the bed.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, at first he's, like, looking at Gabby, like, why are all these, like, what's going on when he first gets there?
Yeah.
And it's, like, she made it look as suspicious as possible. Like, as suspicious as possible. But yeah, the gym sock is, like, the dead giveaway.
So this is another reason not to have so many candles when you're fucking somebody.
So you'll burn a house down or you'll get fucking caught doing something.
Yeah, you're going to commit arson or you're going to get a divorce.
Yeah.
So stop lighting candles. Too many. Stop lighting so many. I don't mind. Like, one or two, do your thing.
A normal amount.
But, like,
a safe.
Do you think it was a fire hazard on set all the time?
At this point, yeah. Like, I mean, I just, my brain is, like, the time and effort to set up that many candles, I can't.
I hope we get sponsored by, like, a candle company eventually.
Yeah, and then we start having, like, we have to light 30 candles every time.
Don't get me wrong, I use candles, but I not one
I
of
love
those
candles.
Situations.
No, I don't have a problem with candles.
I just have a good scent around, but, like, it doesn't make me feel more turned on or aroused.
No.
Like, I'm fine with natural lighting and just, like, normal light and shit, like... Yeah. Especially at 3 in the afternoon, why are we lighting candles?
It's not like Victorian era where you're lighting your house with candles.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need that.
Yeah. So that is, okay, problem number one, the candles. And then Carlos comes home to this curious situation and finds a sock under the bed, which is John's sock because he can't be trusted with anything.
And again, if you're having an affair, maybe put all your shit in a bag. So if you have to run quick, like,
they're
so bad
prepared,
at this.
But I think, okay, this is my theory that she is the type of person that, like, wants to get caught. There are people out there who are cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thrill for them is, like, almost getting caught all the time. And I think that's what Gabby is, that type of person.
She must be.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation.
There's no other reason that she's fucking him with the blinds open and shit.
The blind.
Like, that she's over here, he gets water all over the floor when he dips. Like, they don't try very hard. He gets a pass. He's dumb. He's 15. He's never hooked up with anybody, probably.
Yeah.
So that's my theory. But Carlos finds the sock and he's like, what is this? And why is the cable guy here? And Gabby lies.
She actually pulls.
She thinks on her feet. I do
have
to say.
She has very quick thinking to grab a bunch of dirty socks and put them in the maid closet, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call that. The maid cabinet. I don't know.
And if you want the one, I'm going to keep trying to find these moments, a diverse moment on the show. Their maid is Chinese.
Yeah.
Named Yao Lin.
Yeah.
So diversity featured there. They met the quota that episode. Mm-hmm. So she's like, Yao Lin cleans with socks. And Carlos is like, huh, really? He doesn't know anything going on in his household.
He's so dumb.
So then we see them, I think the next time, Yao Lin is now cleaning their house the next day with the socks on her hands. And Carlos gets her ethnicity wrong, by the way. He's
he like, makes like a really kind of racist.
It was fucked up.
Yeah.
He was like, is this a Japanese thing? And she's like, I'm Chinese.
He's racist and homophobic in this episode. Yeah. This is not a win for Carlos.
Gabby sees this and Gabby's making everybody lie for her. And yeah. The maid is like, I don't like lying for you. And Gabby's like, well, I don't like the way that you do my laundry. Ironing. That's what it was.
She's like, I don't like the way you iron my clothes. So there.
Yeah. And I'm like, this household is all types of fucked up. I'm not interested in that. They're really messed up people. So Gabby starts freaking out and she decides that she hasn't had enough of John this week. Mm-hmm. And she goes and sees him at soccer practice.
It's probably gym class.
It wasn't even, yeah.
I would say it's gym class, which makes it even grosser.
So she's trying to be incognito, but she is the most conspicuous bitch around.
She gives him a pair of Birkenstocks and she's like, no more socks. Carlos can't see you in socks anymore. But I think, you know what the peak moment of the scene is? When John's friends are, like, ogling her.
Yes.
She gets, like, turned on by it. She's like, oh.
She fucking waves at them. She
underage boys. She is a predator, Julia. She has a problem. I think she has a thing for, like, underage boys. That yes. Shit was gross.
So the Burks, the boys hitting on her.
I'm gonna say no to that.
Yeah. So she also warns John. He's like, if I wear these, I'm going to cut my toe off. And she's like, it's better than your dick, basically, because she's like, Carlos will cut your dick off.
She's like, oh, no, Carlos is, like, scary. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it sounds like a healthy relationship, yeah, sis.
Yeah, I'm like, love that. So then we see John outside mowing the lawn in those Birks. We're in Portland, apparently.
Yeah, now, maybe this is in Oregon. Just kidding, it's way too sunny.
It's Bend, Oregon, maybe. Yeah. I heard it's super sunny. I don't know where they're at, but he's mowing the lawn in the Burks. Carlos comes up and he's like, I need to ask you about the cable guy. And John does the shittiest job of lying. Mm-hmm. Carlos is like, did you see the cable guy? And he's like, well, yeah. He's like, damn it. That means that he was here for 4 hours. And John's like, wait, no.
John's like, I was just lying just now, but I'm telling the truth this time.
Yeah. And Carlos is like, is she asking you to lie for her?
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to get in the middle of things. And I'm like, fucking this kid. John's hyperventilating. He's sweating. Carlos storms off and it's over because Carlos goes over to the cable guy's house, which I don't know how he found this dude's address. Do we get any info on that?
He goes, no, wait. How did he find that guy's house?
You put in some work, some legwork. He called the cable company.
Maybe he followed the guy. I don't even know. That's
I didn't think about that until right now. But
me either. Holy shit.
He goes and assaults the already injured cable guy. Mm-hmm. This guy is already injured because he fell and slipped at their house the first time and broke his neck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Carlos goes and beats the shit out of him.
Carlos is like, do you really think you'd have sex with anyone you want?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, they to set the lineup that it could be taken as like a homophobic thing. So I get why they worded it like that. But the way he says that, the guy's like, are you doing this to me because I'm gay? And what does Carlos say? Yeah. Why the fuck would he say that?
Yeah.
Why would he say yes? I'm sitting there like, so you want to be homophobic? Like, what's happening? He's like, that's better than you thinking it's because I thought you were fucking my wife. Why not just say that? I mean, like, my bad. Sorry.
He could have sat down and helped the guy up. Instead, he leaves him on the floor, like, writhing in pain.
I also want to note that when the cable report happens and they're talking about the cable guy,
gay activist and female impersonator.
Yes. They're like, we have to make him as gay as possible.
I know. I did feel
like. I was like, why is it such a stereotype?
They went a little bit overboard that he was a drag queen.
Yeah. I was like, nothing. Like, that's great. But it was also kind of like, they had to make it like the biggest, like it's like that stereotype where it's like every gay person dresses like a woman or like does stuff like that. It was like, yeah, they had to do that. And I was kind of like, that's a bit dated. They're like, if he's not flamboyant, then people won't understand what we're doing here. And it's like, all right.
Like, we get it. You could just say he's gay.
Yeah, you could just say that. But like, and Carlos is like looking around his house and there's like,
okay, that's what I wanted to point out. There's like musical posters, yeah, and like gay porn magazines.
And I'm like, just have like nobody has porn magazines out on their table. No person
or gay or anybody. Bi or that's pansexual. Not a thing. Nobody fucking has their Playboy shit out or whatever.
Again, it's like this.
Their
like,
whips out.
Yeah, like it's like the stereotype that like gay men are like overt with their sexuality.
Yeah,
and it's like okay. This is like, it made me a little, there were moments I was kind of like, oh, this is extra uncomfortable because of just how this is happening, which is interesting because Mark Cherry, who writes all this stuff, is gay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you, it's kind of like the Sex and the City conundrum though. Sex and the City does that too, where they have really dated like LGBT like stuff.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of the people in the writer's room
were gay.
And the showrunner was gay.
Okay.
Michael Patrick King. This raises
a question for me because I'm like, I don't think it's, were they doing it just to help the straight audience understand or
like catering to like the white straight audience? I don't know.
I feel like as time has progressed, shows now are not going as hard with the gay characters. It's just like they're gay.
That's just like, it's not what defines the character.
It's not what defines the character. And there's like always a gay character on cast. I mean, maybe we haven't gotten there with Desperate Housewives, but like all those like soapy teen melodramas like Riverside and shit and like Euphoria and Pretty Little Liars, that I can think that they all have a gay prominent like main character, that it's not like there's typically an episode where they'll be like, this character is gay.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's not like whips and chains and like gay porn and musical posters and like.
Yeah. It was just like a bit, I don't know. I just like, this is a bit, it was distracting.
Yeah, I agree. At the end of it, I was like, oh, they had to like hit it home.
Yeah.
But now I'm wondering why it was written like that. But.
So if you have any answers, anybody.
Yeah.
If there's like some study on like TV from this era and the representation, I would be curious.
Hit up JSTOR. But the newscast comes on that this gay activist was assaulted in his own home as a hate crime, and Carlos is like, what about it? And Gabby's like, oh my
she's
god,
she's like trembling.
Yeah, so she's just thinking about John. She's like, John would never. So that's where the girls all wrap up, and we get one last taste of Paul, suspect husband. He apologizes to Lynette and Gabby about reacting violently to the note and crying and leaving and storming out. But then he says Mary Alice wasn't well. She was troubled. She would leave notes to herself to remind herself to do things. And I'm like, oh my god, I'm troubled. I guess like
this was like such a memory stupid of a story. I was like. No, you should look at my calendar on my phone because it's literally like I'm scheduling shit that I should just know to do because I'm like so stupid. Like I'm like, oh my god, I can't keep track of anything.
Yeah, so apparently we're all troubled. And he's like, first it would be regular things like pick up some milk. I'm like, whoa, Paul is a little bit critical.
Yeah, isn't that just a grocery list?
Yeah, it's a grocery list.
Or a to-do list.
He's feeding you.
Yeah.
But then he's like, then they became hateful and they were written to other people. It was just the whole thing that he was kind of saying that she was schizophrenic. Then he lost it because about the note, he lost his temper and stormed out because he was reminded of what him and his son went through with her. And he's like, keep it to yourself for my son's sake, which can't wait to have a kid to just like blame everything for their sake. Don't do the like,
yeah.
I can't it's come for their sake.
Yeah.
He once again just kind of leaves it there, storms off. Doesn't storm off. I guess he walks away. Gabby and Lynette look at each other and they're like,
they don't buy it.
He's lying. Yeah. So then we see Paul hand the note off to a PI. He's like working with a PI.
Yeah.
The PI is like, what do you want me to do with this note? And he's like, figure out who sent it to my wife. So we're left with the mystery of like, what is this note still? Why was Mary Alice Young in therapy? Because we don't ever revisit that tape. What happened to the trunk?
Who's Angela?
Yeah, who the
who
hell?
Who really is Angela?
Who is Angela? And Mary Alice closes out the episode and she's like, who sent me this note? Was it an enemy? Of course. And she's like, but what kind? An acquaintance? A stranger? Or how about a neighbor that lives a few feet away?
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, I guess I didn't consider acquaintances, strangers, and your neighbors enemies. She's like, what kind of enemy?
Yeah, like a frenemy.
A frenemy. So those are our mysteries that we're left with. Mm-hmm. We didn't see how suspicious Mike Delfino is, but we still have that mystery. Lynette and her boys, like, how are they going to get through that? And then Bree and Rex, like, what's going to happen? Is he going to come back?
Mm-hmm.
And all that shit. So, following that statement, I'm going to ask you to play the most juvenile game ever.
I'm here for it.
Fuck, marry, kill this episode.
This episode?
Yeah, I think we should do this maybe, not every episode, okay. But, like, obviously you might fuck, marry, kill in a different order. Okay. In a different episode.
Okay, okay.
You know
so
what I'm
based,
saying?
Oh, so, like, based on this episode.
Based on everything that happened this episode, what turned you on the most,
mm-hmm.
what didn't, and how would you decide your fuck, marry, kill based on that?
So are we talking characters or moments?
Characters.
Yeah,
fuck, like, marry, kill the moment.
I'm fuck a moment. fuck, marry, kill. Okay. Wow, do you have your answers?
I can certainly come up with them.
Okay.
Well,
I'm going to think on it just for 1 second. I'd probably kill Carlos because he committed a hate crime.
Okay, I love that answer.
I'm going to kill Carlos. I'm going to... Man, I think I'm going to fuck Edie.
Okay, okay.
She's giving me good vibes. I mean, not good vibes, but I do like the dude she was working with. Mm-hmm. And we got, like, you know, her little show she gave
at
the car wash. And then Mary, I'd marry Brie.
Okay.
Yeah, that's someone I want on my team.
You saw that she's been putting in work at Pilates.
Oh, hell yeah.
Or whatever she's doing
Door. I'm like, that's the person I would want on my team.
Yes, yeah. I agree. Brie is my queen. I would marry Julie.
Okay.
Per usual.
Yeah.
I think it's the name association. And I would do this because she came through with logic and reason when Susan was freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And a heartfelt moment that she's like, I don't want to go to dad's. Carl sucks.
Yeah.
Also, she came through with a piece of mail
mm-hmm.
to give Susan a reason to go talk to Mike. She wingwoman. She wingwomaned the shit out of that.
Oh, for sure.
And so I would marry her.
Okay.
Just stellar performance all around. She's really there for you when you need her.
Yeah.
I would fuck Edie as well.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking that before, but I'm thinking that now. She with a sponge on her tits. Yes. We'll go to Carl's Jr. first.
She also has, like, her legs, man.
Yeah.
She had those little booty shorts on. I was like, all
right. I have never seen somebody rock them like that. So I would fuck Edie. I don't think I need to elaborate more on that. Like, we all would.
Yeah.
If that wasn't your answer for fuck, marry, kill this episode, I don't know what was.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would kill Ian or Heath or whatever his name was. The guy from Strip
Yeah.
I don't like him.
He's like slight. He looked like sweaty. Like, super sweaty. It was gross.
Slimy church kid that's moonlighting. He's moonlighting as a nice church boy.
Yeah.
And he is going to the strip club with his bros, cheating on his girlfriend, probably.
Yeah.
I just kill him. Don't like him.
Mm.
I think we need to collectively decide on one housewife as well. We've been doing two, but...
Let's collect... Okay.
Who do you nominate?
Brie.
I do too.
I feel like Bree's the answer.
You guys, we need to post that scene where she knocks on the door.
Yes, like, I just want it like a repeated gif of her just like kicking that fucking door down.
Okay, I'll agree with Bree.
Yeah.
Besides the slut shaming.
But yeah.
But she was doing that to get in her son's head, so maybe I can give her a pass on it. Like, she was trying to be like, she's not wrong. There are many women who are in compromised situations who do end up in that profession, but that's no reason to shame them, and it's totally a legitimate form of work.
Yeah. I think Bree, just because, like, as a mom, too, like, her moment with Andrew at the end, I think, was really good. Like, her opening up for the first time, really, with her kid. Like, or being vulnerable with anybody, really, on the show so far. So, I would just say, I'll give her the Housewife of the Week.
I would have nominated Julie again, but I can't keep doing that.
I would have nominated Julie, and I would have nominated Lynette as well. Just, like, for her momming this week.
Yeah, she mommed hard.
She mommed hard.
But she didn't kick a door down.
No, she did not kick a door down.
She didn't go to a topsy-turvy.
No.
As a reconnaissance mission for her son.
Yeah, no. So
Brie.
Brie's the winner this week.
Housewife of the Week goes to Brie. All right. So now for our Apple rating.
Okay. I have mine.
Okay. I have mine.
Okay. So we're going to count down?
Yes.
3, 2, 1, 4.
Okay.
All right.
I was going to give it 4.5.
Me too.
But then I was like, I have a lot to come my way. You revealed that season 3 is your favorite.
Yeah.
And you've also revealed that Andrew has quite a story arc. So he does. I think there's going to be some 5 apple
there's going to be
ratings.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, like, I'm giving it 4. I really like this episode. Like I said, I think all of them have good stuff to work with. But I do have to dock points. I know we've said it like 8 times, but the depiction of the gay guy, like, and the way that that's all handled, it could have been better.
Yeah.
The mild slut shaming, but like we said, there is kind of like context for what she's doing and why she's saying it.
Yeah.
I feel like Susan's story was good, but we kind of talked about how it was like confusing. Like the timeline with her and Mike was confusing. Like,
yeah, I'm like, movie. He asked you out. Just fucking go. Stop being like, does he like me?
Yeah. And the whole like Martha Huber blackmailing her thing, I'm glad that's already kind of like solved, because it's like, how long were they going to drag that
it
out?
It wasn't that interesting.
Well, and it just wasn't anything real. Like, it wasn't real. Like, there's no way that she could actually blackmail her with just that.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like some of these storylines progressed much further, and we completely skipped over the trunk. The trunk is no longer.
We just didn't come back to it this episode, I guess.
And also, we didn't get any more info on Mike being weird.
Yeah.
So
they really focused more on the individual plots this week.
I liked that, but also they could have done like a 2 minutes to progress some of those storylines, in my opinion.
But I think it's like a solid episode overall.
Yeah, I mean, this, like I said, you guys, I was dying at some of these moments. Mm-hmm. Like the strip club specific, I don't know why that got to me. It's just all the questions about it. Like, he's not old enough to be there. He's there with his weird friends. Yeah. Like, you've all been somewhere where you've seen an underage person at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pretty.
No,
it's uncomfortable for everyone. Yeah,
they look nervous and sweaty, which they do.
They always are. They have bad style. They don't fit in and they're nervous. Mm-mm. So I was just, I couldn't get over it. So all in all, we are ecstatic with that episode.
Yep.
And we can't wait for episode 5 next week.
Pumped.
We hope that you're feeling the same way.
Yeah.
And we hope that you're watching along, or if you're not, that you're at least enjoying us and able to follow a little bit, or just laugh at some of the jokes. But we do post a lot on our social media, and we love to hear your ideas and what you're thinking about these episodes so far. And also, if you have any guest suggestions, we would love to have some guests on here one day.
Absolutely.
Still getting our footing, but it would be thrilling to have somebody speak to. Yeah. I want like an extra on here.
I know. Oh my gosh. The gay guy.
Yes.
The actor.
Where are they
now? I need
now?
To talk to him.
Where are Heath and Ian now?
Yeah, where's Heath? Where he at?
But we would appreciate if you go and follow us on Spotify, and if you go and review us on Apple Music, and if you just give us a follow or a like or just anything, like, we're so thrilled to have you along for this ride.
Yeah, and seriously, check out our Instagram at Desperate Pod. Julia makes some really great graphics on that that are worth checking out, but also, like, we respond to comments. We want messages. Yes. Like, hit us up, slide into the DMs, comment on our posts, get this conversation rolling. Like, we absolutely want to talk with people.
Yes.
Like, you know, guest or no guest.
Yeah, we've been loving it. Like we said, we loved your feedback on our first week or so.
Yeah.
It was just amazing to see you guys be excited about Desperate Housewives again.
Yes. It's like it's 2004 all over again. We need to get ourselves little Juicy Couture suits to wear while we record.
Actually
wait. This is a great idea.
You guys couldn't see my face right now. I fucked Jordan. I'm like, yes, please, the Juicy sweatsuit. We're going to start a GoFundMe for those.
Yeah. No. Hit us up. Get us some vintage Juicy Couture from 2004.
Upcycled. All right, you guys. We're going to stop right now.
We're going to sign off.
Yes. But we'll see you again next week. Know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.
Bye.
Bye. You can unbuckle now.
Yeah.